Today, I'll be drawing from the lesson of the day. Seemed particularly relevant. Starts out, what are the differing views on evil? You hear lots of talk about evil these days, usually talking about Osama bin Laden or something like that. President Bush loves to talk about evil. So views on evil, it's very interesting. Think about it. For monistic theists, the world of Maya is Shiva's perfect creation, containing each thing and its opposite. For pluralistic theists, the world is tarnished with evil. Thus, Maya could not be the creation of a perfect God. So look there, even in Saivasiddhanta, we have one school believing in evil. So there's a wonderful statement that I was drawn to this morning by Telapaswami. Oru polapum illai. There is not one wrong thing. Not one wrong thing. I was reading the, found this in, I wanted to write the Tamil script, so I copied it from the introduction, from Sandaswamy's introduction in Nachintanai, and he reminded me that Telapaswami would choose a Mahavakyam, a great statement like this, and mutter it for a year. You know, just keep saying it over and over and over again, reflecting upon it for a whole year. So what does that show us? It shows us maybe this statement is worth thinking about. Maybe there's more to it than meets the eye. So, of course, we can apply it to the world. When we say there's not one wrong thing, whatever happened was destined to happen because of what happened in the past, right? Present is the effect of a previous cause, as Gurudeva says in describing karma. This is the effect of a previous cause, and the previous cause was the effect of a previous cause, and that previous cause was the effect of a previous cause, and so forth. So whatever happens in the present was created in the past. So to really be content with what's going on in the world, no matter how problematic, how difficult, is what this is about. That quite often we're influenced, particularly when other people are influenced. We talk to them and they're all depressed and discouraged and afraid. And we talk to them and we pick that up more than we realize. It influences our state of mind. It influences our perspective on life. It influences our long-term plans. All of a sudden, they get shorter. Why? Because we're dealing with people who have been significantly influenced by the events of the world. And they're definitely worried, afraid, and they see evil. They don't like to see evil. So, oru polapum illai. There's not one wrong thing. To really look at the world that way is a wonderful relief. Nothing wrong. Everything's perfect. Everything is as it should be because that's what got created by what happened before. Not because it's the ideal that somebody wanted. It's what we all created by what we did before. So it's good to reflect and look at our own thinking and make sure that we're not being unduly influenced by others who are reacting negatively, and to keep our long-term plans long, maybe even make them longer, add a few more years on. Remember that life is what we make it. We create our future by how we act in the present. That's looking at the world. We can also look at our own life. Apply this same idea. There's not one wrong thing to our own life. Recently, a number of devotees have mentioned difficult situations at work of one kind or another. Having trouble dealing with a supervisor who's not at all religiously minded, kind of low-minded person, gives them a difficult time, is constantly throwing them off center. They're in a situation at work where they're not being treated justly. Others are being favored and somehow they're getting unfavorable treatment. It's not a just situation. Of course, in that situation, what is it easy to do? It's easy to feel that something's wrong, right? This is not how it should be. I should not be treated unjustly. It's not fair. Right? Wrong. Of course we should be being treated unjustly if we are being treated unjustly, because that's our karma, right? We couldn't possibly be treated unjustly if it wasn't our karma to be treated unjustly. It doesn't happen. There is not one wrong thing. So anything that happens in our life that we don't accept, that we feel it should be otherwise, we're making it a wrong thing. We're saying life should not be treating us this way. This person should not be treating us this way. This should not be happening. This is a wrong thing. So Swami's sage advice is, don't look at it that way. It's a right thing. Why is it right? Not because it's ideal, but because we created it by our own past actions. Everything we face, we created. Looking at it as a wrong thing, wishing it wouldn't happen, might be prolonging its happening because we're not accepting it. We're not letting it go. If we can look at it in a way that, gee, I'm being treated unjustly. How interesting. Who was I unjust to in a past life, I wonder? How many times was I unjust in a past life? Maybe I'm being unjust to somebody in the present life. Maybe I haven't changed. Maybe I better think about that. Maybe I better be a little more just to everyone else, just to be sure that I don't create this again in the future, once the current situation goes away. So we can reflect and use this wonderful principle to be self-reflective upon what we've created in the past. Make sure we're not creating it again for the future, because we just might be. So, of course, the greatest example there was Swami Sivananda when he was attacked unjustly by someone at his ashram. And, of course, as we know the story, he went the next day to jail and garlanded the person and thanked him for bringing that karma back to him and playing it out and getting rid of it. Maybe that was his last karma on the planet. That one came back and he was so happy. He said, oh, this is wonderful. I'm so glad this person was unjust to me. So how many of us are able to say that when that happens? I'm so glad this person was unjust to me. I got rid of that karma. Because there's not one wrong thing. So anyway, we can see it's a very profound statement, certainly worth repeating for a few years. Next part of today's lesson is on Vedanta and religious unity. And the text focuses on how the truths of the Upanishads, the oneness of God and man, is presented sometimes without fitting into any particular religion. It sounds like anyone can successfully grab onto one of the yogas, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Raja Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and realize God, no problem. Yoga and Vedanta. So, of course, Gurudeva points out that it doesn't necessarily work that way. And there is a need for religion. So, as many of us know who have been with Gurudeva a long time, when Gurudeva first taught us, he taught us meditation. Focused on realization and meditation and seeing our inner light and going deeper, and for monks realizing Parashiva. And all of a sudden, something changed. Gurudeva started teaching us devotion. All of a sudden, we were building temples and spending time in New York across the street from temples. And temples were important and Ganesha was everywhere. What changed? Gurudeva realized that his devotees needed a foundation of devotion. To pursue meditation without a foundation of devotion might not bear fruit. Why is this? Because life throws us off center. Because we have ups and downs. We have difficult times. Things don't always go well for us. We get upset. People we love have problems. So forth. Life can be very disturbing. So if your only practice is meditation, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always work. Karma can be rough and impossible to meditate. So if your only practice is meditation, what happens when you can't meditate? You're in trouble. You don't have anything else. You have nothing to fall back on. You have no foundation. You might get very depressed. You might go down in consciousness because your one religious practice doesn't work anymore. So one of the reasons Gurudeva brought forth devotion is that it gives us something to fall back on if we can't meditate. Gives us, it's like the tight rope walker and the safety net. Gives us a safety net so we don't hit the ground and break a leg or something. If we can't pursue what we were pursuing successfully, devotion always works. The net of devotion catches us from falling into a low state of mind, a depressed state of mind, a suicidal state of mind. We're caught by the net of devotion. We don't get anywhere near those negative areas. So it provides a wonderful stabilizer on the path. It keeps the emotions from swinging all over the place, the mood from swinging all over the place. Because one of the problems, if you don't have that, is you can have a really, really wonderful meditative experience, go very, very deep in consciousness, and then go the opposite way, go down in consciousness just as far as you went up if you don't have stability. So Gurudeva brought us all into devotion, and that's one of the reasons.